ESPN 1700 AM. It's the Real Estate Radio Hour with your host,
Big Mac, David McKelvin. Man, have we got a good show in for you today.
And myself, Ryan White. We have with us today Mike Bosworth. Mike Bosworth Leadership, his website, MikeBosworthLeadership.com. He's a co-founder of Story Leaders in 2008. In 2013, he founded the Mike Bosworth Leadership, an executive coaching program. Also author, What Great Salespeople Do, Solution Selling, Customer-Centric Selling, and, well, there was talk about another one. Do you have another one in you?
It makes me groan to think about it right now.
Maybe another one.
I'm too busy to think about it right now.
Okay, got it. Excellent. Also with us today, Kathy Holly. She is an estate liquidator.
Liquidator.
Excellent.
It's easy for you to say.
We can stumble on that one.
We're going to go over some of the liquidation processes one might go through to declutter the home. Well, for a sale or, frankly, for any reason, it may apply.
You know, it is no secret that the real estate market's been going up since 2009. And we're starting to see of the different districts that we're studying and watching that home prices have stabilized to some extent depending on whether or not the inventory levels are normal. And we've seen home prices in some cases ratchet down a little bit. And it's becoming more and more important because when we begin to look at the real estate cycle, that people pay attention to how they're presenting this product to the market. And one of the things that we've discovered along the way is this process of liquidating some of the assets that people have in the home to declutter it. And that's why we've brought Kathy Holly in here to talk about some of the processes that she's been doing for 22 years to declutter homes and make them more presentable and therefore net the seller more money. And along the way, you've learned a lot about appraising certain items. In fact, there's one item that we've been talking about just in, you know, just in between us ourselves here that I think we should bring forward now that's really exciting for the family. So tell us a little bit about that.
I was asked, David, to appraise a home, the contents of a home for the trust prior to the estate sale to furnish the trustee with an appraisal of all items in the home over $25. So within that process, there was a category. I divide it up. I do furniture, artwork, wall decor, household items, small items, collections. And within the category of artwork, there were many beautiful paintings in the house, but the one painting that no one paid any attention to was this really small, dark little painting in the corner of a room. And when I appraised it, I found out that it was a famous artist, could be a famous artist, if we could find a signature on it. Part of it was visible, and the name was also on the frame. So we went by the name on the frame and sent it up to Christie's, and it's still being worked on at the moment, but if it is the actual artist that's indicated on the frame, the last time that this painting was sold was in 2013 at Christie's, and it sold for $35 million.
Talk about a game changer.
Whoa.
Right? I mean, acres of diamonds, right, in your own backyard. You just don't know what the family has accumulated over these years. They may have picked up something worth something. In fact, this painting is well over the whole value of the estate, isn't that right?
Oh, yes. And the whole structure of the estate processing, as far as with the attorney, changed at that point. It went into probate, assets were secured, and the whole structure changed at that point. Now, it's gone over to a conservator who is taking the layers of accumulated grime and soot off of the painting to see if we can unearth the actual signature on the piece of art. So we're still in the process. We don't know.
Yeah, I mean, what a relic, really, to uncover within the trust that you guys were, in a sense, overlooking until you showed up and started assessing the value of all these antiques, these artwork pieces. You know, it makes me wonder what is in my family. I mean, in my grandfather's guest room, there's this beautiful painting that we've always enjoyed. And who knows what this thing is worth? Because if they happen to pass on, maybe they don't even know what they've got. And that's one of the aspects that, you know, we're looking at when it comes to having you evaluate some of the assets. Because when we're hired to sell the home, a lot of times it comes with all the things that are inside of it. And those things are part of the trust, are part of the assets that these homeowners are asking us to liquidate in a lot of cases. So, you know, we've had example after example where we've seen homes sell for less than they should just because it's presented incorrectly.
Sure. Sure. I really like the idea of the appraisal prior to any process of liquidation. There's so many times, especially if there's a trust involved, there's so many times when there is, say, for instance, two brothers. This happened within the recent past. Two brothers are the beneficiaries of the trust. One of the brothers loves his mom's, is sentimentally attached to his mother's things. The other brother doesn't care. He's more interested in the money. So the one brother wants to have a lot of her things, which are valuable. And the other brother is arguing that they should be all sold to benefit both of them. So if there's an appraisal prior to any estate liquidation involved, we can find out precisely the value of the items in the estate. The brother who wants to take items out can be charged for them against the proceeds that would have come to him. And the other brother now is very happy because he's not losing money as a result of his brother's sentimentality.
Yeah, or so, frankly being taken advantage of in this situation.
I mean,
certainly
that happens too. Yeah.
A lot of family heirlooms, if you will, could mean more to somebody than they're actually worth. And in a lot of cases, you know, we don't just want to sell these in a estate sale. The family has an opportunity to go in beforehand and really pick and choose, so long as they get along in the process, what's actually going to be sold, what's not going to be sold. And there's a process in which this goes through. So you come in as a peacekeeper. And if you're just tuning in, we're talking with Kathy Hawley with Estate Liquidation Services about some of the discoveries that you've had along the 22 years you've been in business and some of the decluttering processes in a liquidation sale to really move the real estate in the proper manner. Her direct line is 760-521-1881. If you've got a piece of art in the family that you just don't know about or antique for that matter, you have the expertise to really look at that product and figure out how much it's worth.
That's my goal, is to research it until we know precisely, with no doubt, exactly what the item is.
So let's just say that someone says, you know what, Kathy, I've got an estate here. We've got all these personal items here. We want to do an estate sale. What is the chronological process that you go through?
They give me a call. We set up a time. If they have the opportunity to take items out of this estate, and that's what it says in the trust, I come in after their process is complete, because what we want to know is, what am I expected to sell? So I do what's called a walkthrough. There's no charge. It takes about 1 hour, and we simply do that. Walk through the entire estate, look in the cupboards, look in the cabinets, walk in the garage, look at the outbuildings. Sometimes there's an apartment or a studio apartment attached. Look at the entire estate, and then we talk about how I'm going to help them, what my process is. We sign a contract, and they give me a set of keys, and I start my process on time. I'm a real stickler for getting things done on time or before the due date. And basically what I do is I go to the location, I sort everything out, the contents of the house, display everything so that it makes sense, so that it's an orderly, non-chaotic display process of the entire contents of the house. Everything that's in the cabinets, everything that's in the drawers, it all comes out and gets displayed. Then I research the items, go through one by one. That's a big category for me, and I really enjoy that part of the job too. Price everything, advertise it. I'm a terrific advertiser. I have just my email list is more than 1,600 shoppers who are dying to come to the next sale because they have this sickness. It's called estate sales, and they have to come to estate sales. So they're dying to come. Advertise it. Staff the sale with regular workers who love doing estate sales. They love working with the public, and they have backbones like steel, and they do a terrific job for us. They're a vigilant crew on site during the hours that this sale is open. We have a terrific sale for 3 days. At the end of the sale, the property is cleared. I vacuum up the big chunks, take the debris off the property, and hand the keys and give my client an enormous check. That's the process.
Okay, so, you know, you're booked quite a ways out. So how long is it? I mean, this is, you can't just call Kathy on Thursday, expect a sale on Saturday.
Not going to happen.
Yeah. How far out are you booked?
It just depends. It depends. Just sometimes someone will call and someone has canceled, or they have done it a different way. Sometimes I'm available right away. The actual processing time for the estate is about 3 weeks from the time I get to the key, I get the keys to the time I'm handing the keys back. That's as little as 3 weeks. If it's a huge estate, I did one recently in Coronado, 30-year lifetime, 3,000 square foot home, three stories, completely packed. That took me 6 weeks.
Okay, if you're just tuning in, we've got Kathy Holly here in our studio talking about estate liquidation services, the process in which you're going to go through in terms of getting rid of some of those family heirlooms to extract as much as you possibly can from the estate. Her direct line is 760-521-1881. And when we come back, we're going to talk to Mike Bosworth with Mike Bosworth Leadership. Welcome back, ESPN 1700 AM, Real Estate Radio Hour. We've been talking with Kathy Holly. Her number, 760-521-1881. One more time, 760-521-1881. Kathy Holly with Estate Liquidation Services. Now, anybody out there that is, well, been following the news at all, has come to the understanding that getting a loan nowadays has become much more difficult. And there's a good reason out there. Real estate values are on the rise, mortgage rates are low, and most lenders are requiring, believe it or not, that you have a job. I know, bummer, right? There was a time when that didn't matter. But now, all of a sudden, it matters. There's other things you have to have, but a job is clearly one of the most important parts. And that's why we have Mike Bosworth here. One more time, his website, MikeBosworthLeadership.com, MikeBosworthLeadership.com. He's a sales training coach, but right now we're going to lend his sales training to the process of an interview and actually getting a job. And Mike, you quoted a statistic to me about MBAs when we were on the break. Go ahead and say that one again.
Well, I've got a speaking engagement early April with an association of 60 business schools, and they're the part of the business school that are trying to help them get jobs when they graduate. And today, she said that 80% of MBAs end up paying for their own tuition to get that MBA. In the old days, 30 years ago, if you worked for Xerox or IBM and you wanted to get an MBA, your company would pay your tuition. There's a lot less of that going on. And so now there's a lot of these MBAs that have gotten big student loans in order to get their MBAs. And now they've graduated and, wow, no jobs. They're really struggling. Even MBAs are struggling to get jobs. And so basically, I think getting a job today is as hard as it's ever been.
Could be one of your first sales pitches.
Oh, yeah. Well, the title of the talk I'm going to do for them is Emotional Decisions, Logical Reasons. Hiring is emotional. When you trust somebody, it's a feeling. When you like somebody, it's a feeling. And so people are making emotional decisions to hire the people they want to hire, but then they're superiors, and everybody wants to make sure they made a logical decision, so then they're going to have to defend it logically. But that's the easy part. It's getting them to make the emotional decision on the human being across the desk in that chair. That's where the real decision comes in.
Well, I would think that should you not already have a contact with the particular company that gives you an edge, if you're just one resume in the stack, it's the accolades that actually get you the interview, you know, the stuff on paper. But once and sitting there, it's that personal connection that gets you the job. And that's really what you're talking about, is connecting the dots at the interview portion, right?
Partially, but back to your first point, I would sit down with people who are looking for jobs, who are in our workshops, and I say, first of all, what's your dream job? What's your dream company? And in our regular workshops, we have people write the story of their organization, their company's story, the Who I Represent story. For people who are looking for a job, I encourage them to research the company you want to work for and learn the story of that company's founder and how it was founded and what the vision was and what their mission was. Because if I know your story, now I can teach them how to cold call a senior executive of that company and say to them, when I heard that you guys were the ones who really figured this out, I can't get it off my mind. I want to work for your company. What do I have to do to get an interview? And if you can cold call a senior executive like that, you will get an interview. Okay, now we still have to pass the interview.
Sure, that's brilliant. More of the sniper approach, being targeted with the location you're going for and digging up history on them. And, of course, we want this to be genuine. I mean, you genuinely have
to
want to work for the company.
It has to be genuine.
It makes a lot of sense. So it really sounds like getting a job, to some degree, is a job.
It is a job. It's a big sales job. It's one of the biggest sales jobs you'll ever have because you're the product.
And you're underpaid for that one.
Oh, you're way underpaid for that one. Yeah.
So you're,
it's a nonprofit.
That's right.
You're taking general sales skills that you've honed over the years that one might apply to a product,
right,
and putting that into the workforce, or putting that into the pre-workforce, so to speak, so the person can get into the workforce, and it's through your workshops that a lot of that knowledge occurs?
Well, if you were a regular salesperson, you need a minimum of 3 stories. I'm in the story business. You need the story of your organization. You need your personal story, why you're doing what you're doing, why you took the path you did, what lessons you learned, and then you need stories about people you've helped with your product. But when you're looking for a job, the key story, that to me are 2 key stories. One is you want to learn the story of the organization that you're rifle targeting.
Mm-hmm.
But then your personal story has to convince them that you're a person of character. There was an article in the New York Times recently about Google's hiring model.
Okay.
And they actually put in this article, everybody should read it, is that they want people who will operate as part of a team, but if the team hits a pothole, they're willing to step in and lead. You can't put that on a resume.
Right.
That's part of a story.
So in a lot of your sales training, and of course the one associated with getting a job in the job interview, you're assisting the candidate in developing these stories that appropriately communicate what they want to say without seeming overly pretentious?
Absolutely.
Is that kind of the idea?
Absolutely, yeah. Part of every good story, part of it has a complication, a struggle. And so when people go in and tell Superman stories when they're interviewing, people don't want to hire Superman because Superman's an illusion. They want to know, who is this human being? And years ago when I was working for Xerox, we hired a company called Selection Research. And they did personality testing, and they came up with profiles based on job titles. They had a personality profile for a teacher, a school administrator, a fireman, a policeman, a salesperson. Because their point was, you hire people as they are. So whatever package of values and character that human being has when they come on your payroll, as their employer, you're going to have very little influence over that. So therefore, you should really make sure you know who that human being is before you make them a job offer. And so as an employer, I want to know your story. And if I'm interviewing you, I'm going to start asking questions about your story because I'm looking for instances of character where even though it was hard, you did the right thing. Even though you had a tough lesson, you picked yourself up, you learned from it, and you decided to go forward. I want to know that you can operate as part of a team. I want to know that you're not going to make company promises to customers that we can't keep. And so, really, in both directions. I mean, the candidate wants to know that whatever the job is within their own character, and they can get excited about and behind.
So how many days is this seminar you have coming up?
2.5 days.
So really what you're talking about is in 2.5 days, which isn't necessarily taking on its own career, you're gaming up. Teaching these newly grads or whoever wants to actually be part of this how to actually reverse engineer the hiring process and therefore then be that much more prepared to actually nail it.
Absolutely. Well said.
We're talking with Mike Bosworth, his website, MikeBosworthLeadership.com. That's his website, MikeBosworthLeadership.com. What I think is really unique here is applying these sales skills to that. And so your seminars, you go through, you develop these three different stories. And obviously a person could have more, right?
Oh, yeah.
More. But three is kind of the minimum different ones you need. And in addition to looking for a job, you've got a variety of different facets it applies to. Leadership, marketing, sales track. What other avenues does this apply to?
Well, primarily it's for salespeople where we're trying to teach them to influence other people to do difficult things that need to be done using the power of story. But for sales leaders, the biggest problem sales leaders have is their former top 20% salespeople who sold intuitively, and so they don't know how to coach their own bottom 80%.
Right.
So they come out with a framework for coaching the people that they never knew how to coach before. And the senior leaders, they have two challenges as leaders. One is their direct reports, and these are usually pretty senior people, CEOs and stuff. So it's leading their direct reports without bullying them and truly getting them motivated and following the direction. But then they've also got to lead one to many too. So we help them with their stories on two levels. At a personal level, we teach them how to be vulnerable because if they're vulnerable with their direct reports will be vulnerable back. But that's hard for some of these alpha males to be vulnerable. And when they're on the podium and they're speaking to the masses at the company meeting, they are doing one-to-many leading, and they're not going to get the same level of vulnerability with many that you would with one. But we do teach them that if they can laugh at themselves, a little self-deprecating humor can go a long ways as far as a senior leader connecting with the 10,000 people watching the company story video.
We're talking with Mike Bosworth, his website, MikeBosworthLeadership.com. That's his website, MikeBosworthLeadership.com. And this is one of the things that I always focus on when I'm looking at this is the concept of leading without authority. And I did a Facebook post a while back, and I messed it up. I said leading with authority,
ooh,
right? And you very quickly corrected me.
Well, you were in the Army then. That's what the Army is, leading with authority.
So leading without authority. And what does that mean? We're going to talk about that a little bit more when we come back. And also, I'm going to have Mike go through and make up one or two of these sales stories he's talking about so you guys can really get a good feeling of, you know, the ideas and what he can impart with these stories. It's non-combative. I think that's really important. Ahead of us when we come back, we'll also speak with Kathy Holly a little bit more on the estate liquidation process. Ahead of us when we come back. Welcome back. You just tuned in. We've been talking with Mike Bosworth. His website, MikeBosworthLeadership.com. That's his website, MikeBosworthLeadership.com, for more on his Story Seekers Workshop and Story Seekers in general.
You know, we talked with Kathy Holly, the first segment, with Estate Liquidation Services about this discovered painting that came through the process of evaluating the appraisal process of an estate to actually have a estate sale. And this painting, which is now going under the renovation process to see if it's authentic or not, could possibly be worth somewhere north of $30 million. Is that right?
Yes, $35 million was the price for the painting, a similar painting, the last time it was sold in 2013.
Yeah, so Kathy Holly, you know, has been doing estate sales for over 22 years. And what she does is she comes in and evaluates different pieces of antique furniture or even tools or things like that. And you then hold an estate sale. And we're talking about the process of how you do that, what the expectations for the family are. And so you touched on a number of things in terms of the process. And really the truth of the matter is that it takes time to evaluate these things. It takes time to get people, you know, booked with you in order to have this estate sale process take place. And, you know, the statistics are out. They're showing that home values are up by 4% when the house is decluttered. This is a pretty big number. So you're liquidating the assets for the estate, and you're improving the overall value of the estate when you're actually decluttering in this process. So, you know, there's this zero waste that you talked on. So tell me more about what you mean by zero waste.
Zero waste. I was introduced to zero waste by the city of Oceanside, who had me, who invited me to be a member of a task force, and they invited members of the small business community in North Coastal County, San Diego, and they had us spend 2 days brainstorming about how do we get our business or a small business to the point where nothing is going to the landfill. How do we bring our business to that point, our employees to the point where they understand that the items that are within a business location can be resold, can be repurposed, can be recycled, so that what's going to the landfill is at a minimum. And in my business, I have the entire contents of a person's home. I have everything in Dad's garage. I have all the stuff that's in the sheds. Sometimes there's additional buildings attached to the house, studio apartments, or a three-car garage that's been converted to a library. And it's all full of the contents of this house. What we do, if I can get to the owners or the trustee early enough in the process, if I can tell them, don't throw anything away. Simply do what I can't help you with on this process, which is remove the personal documents that you need to remove, take your photographs out, the family photos, take whatever has been bequeathed to a person, remove that from the home, and then give me a call and let me start my process. I'm going to be the one who does the donating. I'm going to be the one who does the discard. And in that way, I have control over the contents of the house. And what I do is offer as much as we can to be sold. People buy the oddest things, and they buy everything. They buy everything in the house. They know somebody. They have a family member who's starting out their home, a grandchild or their own child with their first apartment, or somebody who's going to school. And they need that furniture. They need those household goods that most of us wouldn't even consider having in our homes. But they're not shy. They'll buy the diamond ring, the best diamond ring in the jewel case from us, and they'll buy a whole pile of blankets for their dog. I mean, there's no accounting for public taste. I completely give up. So what I do is organize it so that they can see what's in there and allow them to buy it. So first of all, we're reselling. When the sale is over, The 3 days are over. The event is finished. The last few shoppers have come through, and we know what's left in the house now really needs to be cleared because we want to present that house empty for the next step after we leave.
Well, what happens to the stuff that doesn't get sold?
First of all, my primary responsibility to the trust or to the estate or the owner is to get the highest possible dollars for each and every item that's contained in the estate. So that means if there are fashionable pieces of furniture that have gone unsold that are in good condition, they can go to a consignment store. We'll have a consignment store pickup. After that, if there are still items left that can be sold, they will go to the auction in San Diego. AAA Auction is the auction that I use. And they're licensed, bonded, and insured. They'll come and do a pickup. We'll prepare that load for them. They'll come and pick it up. After that, there are items to be donated. And different charities accept different kinds of donations. Goodwill takes things that Salvation Army doesn't take and vice versa. So there may be one or more pickups going off to a charitable organization. Then there is what is left. And what is that that's left? Usually, it's thrown away. But what we do is we recycle. Paper, plastic, metal, it all gets recycled.
Well, you know, it seems like when I hear people say that their business is green and I start to really dive into it and I think, okay, well, this product that's supposedly green costs more money, which means I'm going to burn more carbon to earn the money to buy that product. So right off the bat, a lot of these green, so-called green companies are not green at all. But, you know, certainly repurposing things seems like at the top of the list in terms of recycling things, and recycling them at a lower cost seems really, really nice as well. You know, when I think about estate sales, I'm thinking about the tools, right? I mean,
absolutely.
I mean, as frequently as I use them, and they don't need to be brand new,
no,
in my opinion, for the tool to still do its job. And you must come across all kinds of tools.
Tools are great. In the old days, there was guys bought Craftsman. There wasn't a Home Depot, you know. Guys bought Craftsman tools because they knew that those were lifetime tools and they were going to be good for as long as they owned them. And our estates are full of Craftsman tools, Snap-on tools, Craftsman tools, tool cases with everything.
We're talking with Kathy Holly, Estate Liquidation Services. Her number 760-521-1881. One more time, 760-521-1881. And one point I want to really emphasize here is that when we go through the process and we walk into a lot of homes, really there's so much more money that is left in the home by simply decluttering it. We have all heard of the concept of curb appeal, right? And that's grass and paint and door and all that stuff from the outside. Well, let's say the curb appeal is great. People eventually get inside. And when you can't walk around, when you can't see the view, when you can't see the kitchen, when the general house is buried under stuff, or even if it gives the impression of being dated because of the stuff that's around it, it really diminishes the perceived value of the home. I've seen homes that are, for the most part, turnkey to give the appearance of being a fixer just because of the condition, quality, and the amount of stuff that's around. So it is so important to declutter the home. That's why we recommend Kathy Holly one more time, 760-521-1881. Second point here is, why not just have a garage sale? I mean, we've all heard of garage sales. Garage sales exist. It is really Kathy's clientele. It is that 1,600 email list you described of people who show up that are willing to spend more than $2 for stuff, that are out there not just driving around on a Saturday, Sunday morning, looking for something to do, way of killing time. They're strategic about what they want. They have the understanding of what antiques value is, and they show up with cash in hand with money ready to spend, right?
Right. Generally, if I have a good estate, by good estate, I mean the entire contents of a home. If everything is in the home when I get it, and I communicate that to my shoppers, that this is an intact estate and everything is still in there, we can have easily at opening up to 100 sometimes 150 people waiting in line. They have to take a number to come into my estate sale so that it's an orderly process. Waiting there with their number in order, waiting to come in and give us money for everything that's in that house. And they're all there for something else. Some people like just rugs. Some people only buy the cream of the crop. Some people are looking for dishes. They only do china. Some people only do tools. That's all they're in there for. Or some love jewelry. There's categories, but they're waiting there to come in. The mistakes I see most often that people make are, number one, they come to the house and they order a giant bin. And then they spend an unbelievable amount of time throwing things away. That's number one. Because what they're throwing away, generally speaking, are all the collectibles, which are sometimes, they're all memory items. And sometimes those collectibles are worth more than the antiques. But it's a category, those are categories of merchandise that these homeowners don't understand. They just know it's old stuff and they throw it away.
Yeah, my mother-in-law has told me stories about her and her friend getting up at 5 o'clock in the morning, driving down, I think it was in La Jolla, and getting a number, and then going to breakfast for 2 hours and coming back at whenever the estate sale opened up. That's the difference in clientele between a garage sale and Kathy's Shoppers, which is really the most important part. Her number again, 760-521-1881. One more time, Kathy Holly, Estate Liquidation Services, 760-521-1881. When we come back, going to hear more from Mike Bosworth, hear a little bit about leading without authority, and I'm going to make him tell us a couple stories ahead of us when we come back. I've been around for a long, long year. Welcome back, ESPN 1700 AM. It's the Real Estate Radio Hour with your host,
Big Mac David McKelvin.
And myself, Ryan White. We've been talking with Kathy Holly, Estate Liquidation Services. One more time, 760-521-1881. 760-521-1881. Now switching gears to Mike Bosworth. Mike Bosworth Leadership. This concept of leading without authority. What does that mean?
Well, I tell my audiences that the one thing everybody in society can learn from top salespeople is how to lead or influence without authority. In most companies today, 20% of the salespeople are bringing in 80% of the business. And if you think about what those people are really good at, they are able to get other people to buy from them, sometimes spend hundreds of thousands of dollars in the B2B world, yet they have no authority over them. So they're being able to influence them to make big, difficult decisions with no authority. And then most great salespeople get promoted into quote-unquote management, and now all of a sudden they're asked to use the left side of their brain to help people do their forecasts and ask people where their expenses are and how come you didn't make enough cold calls yesterday and all of that stuff. And their talent is being squandered, and now they've been given this authority that they're going around trying to get the salespeople that work for them to buckle under, and nobody likes it. But the hardest group of people, I believe, to manage in the it's certainly in our society is teenagers. And so when I have CEOs in my audiences, they might have authority at work, but when they go home with that teenager has no trouble, you know, giving the big alpha male the big you know what signal.
Why is that?
I don't know. You mean why are teenagers so hard to manage?
I guess that's, you can say that.
I think we're biologically coded to separate from our parents at some point.
Oh, I think so too.
Yeah. And so, you know, I think probably 95% of people are capable of raising children lovingly until they hit 12. And then it's about 5%. I see most of the families I see with teenagers, the parents are blowing it because they're pulling the authority card. Oh. And so if you could lead your teenagers without authority, then you can do it anywhere. And so an example would be, I mean, you know, I'm kind of disabled. I don't walk so fast, and I feel frightened to death in crosswalks because I've been almost hit by teenagers texting while they're driving. They don't even know I'm there. So I jaywalk, because at least when I jaywalk, I can pick my opening, right? I have control. But when I'm in a crosswalk and I'm relying on some teenager who's texting. So if I had a teenager driving right now, most parents are going to say, if I ever hear about you texting while you're driving, you're never going to see that car again. I'm going to sell that car. I'm going to lock you in the garage for 3 weeks. I mean, you know, they pull out the authority
card. Sounds like a good plan.
Yeah. And most teenagers are, you know, in one ear and out the other. But if a dad could come home one day and at the dinner table express his true emotions about hearing that day that a guy he knows, daughter, just got killed in a car accident, and she was texting while she was driving, and then look at his own daughter and say, oh my God, that's my worst nightmare. That would be the most horrible thing I could imagine, for you to die from carelessness. Please promise me that you're not going to text when you drive. And instead, and so I'm really saying, use a story and get them to volunteer to go along with where you want them to go, versus saying, I'm the parent, you got to do what I say you have to do. But in the corporate world, it's the same thing. The military is worse, because the military, they don't need it. You don't need to know. If you're in the military, you don't need to have any opinions about the character of your leader, because it doesn't matter. Whatever he or she tells you you have to do, you have to do.
That's the idea, right?
Right. I guess. Although, I contend that the best military leaders would still inspire with story rather than bring out the sledgehammer.
If you're just tuning in, we're talking with Mike Bosworth. His website, MikeBosworthLeadership.com. That's his website, MikeBosworthLeadership.com. I have an eight-month-old, so let's hope it will be many, many years before I have to give the texting and driving conversation to her. But I really see the difference in the approach. Much softer, much smoother, much less adversarial, and I can see how that would be much better received.
And from your heart, as one person.
That's an important part.
To another person, from one person who loves the other person. And yeah.
So your storytelling workshops, tell us again.
We do a 2.5-day workshop that's got a lot of practice. There's certain things in life that you can't learn from a video or a book. There's certain things you just have to do. I don't think you can learn to play tennis watching a video. I don't think you can learn to fly an airplane watching a video. There's certain things you have to do it and practice. And communicating and listening is one of those, as well as building and telling stories. So there's lots of companies. There's over 30 companies right now in the corporate world teaching corporate customers how to be better storytellers. Storytelling is hot right now. But most of those companies are only doing the storytelling. That's our day one. Day one of our workshop is the brain science behind why stories are so powerful with human beings. And then we give them the structure, the storyboard, and the card system. We teach them to build and tell a couple of stories the first day. The second day of the workshop, we focused on tending the other person's story. So in the typical sales world, the very hardest thing, if you're in sales, is connecting with a stranger. I mean, you guys could even think about it if you're holding an open house. I love to go look at houses. And over the years, of the hundreds of open houses I've just walked into, probably 98% of those real estate people never connected with me. And all they would have had to do to say to me is, oh, get my name or whatever. Just look around. Let me know if you have any questions. And if you're curious, there's a really interesting story about this house.
That's it. That's it. Everybody's curious, right?
And if they're not curious, they're going to go look around.
Okay.
But most people can't resist a story.
I can't imagine anybody resisting that.
There's a really interesting story about this house, if you're interested. So in other words, when we teach salespeople to approach strangers for the first time, we say in a 10-second window. So for instance, if I'm working a trade show for one of my clients that's selling manufacturing productivity systems, somebody comes up to me, I say, oh, hi, I'm Mike Bosworth. What do you do? And he says, I'm a materials manager. In that 10 seconds, I can say, can I share a short story with you about another materials manager I work with? Once I get permission, I have 90 seconds. And in those 90 seconds, my mission is to say at the end of my story, enough about me, tell me about you, where that person's now freely talking to me. Now I tend his story. That's where the connection is.
Interesting. We're talking with Mike Bosworth, MikeBosworthLeadership.com. It's his website. One more time, MikeBosworthLeadership.com. It's the story seeker concept, but with applications to, of course, the job interview process, the daughter-teenager process. I would imagine you mentioned applies to your wife as well. Should
Absolutely.
It come to that? Of course, and general sales. It's all there, MikeBosworthLeadership.com. Also, Kathy Holly, Estate Liquidation Services, 760-521-1881. One more time, 760-521-1881. Thank you both for coming in and sharing your expertise with us.
Thank you.
Until
My
next
pleasure.
Week. Thank you.